Today on the Callahan Podcast, well, that was interesting. Joe Biden did a town hall on CNN, and what a mess. Good news is he didn't tell any lies. He just had goofy little gaffes. That from the Washington Post fact checker. We'll give you all the highlights and lowlights from Joe Biden's town hall. Also, Joe Buck, an interesting confession from Joe Buck. Apparently, he and Troy Aikman drink in the booth. Another guy who confesses to sipping a little tequila at work. We'll give you the details on that. And the biggest hypocrite on planet Earth is formerly the richest guy, still one of the richest guys on Earth. Bill Gates wants you to eat synthetic beef to save the planet. And we'll ask the question once again, is anyone going to listen to Bill Gates? And is anyone going to root for the Boston Red Sox? Is there a less likable team out there? We'll get into all that and more on the Callahan Podcast today, brought to you by DCU. Do you love your car but hate your car payment? No problem. Refinance your car today with DCU, and they can help lower your monthly payment, lower your interest rate, or both. Applying is easy, and the loan experts will help you find the loan term and the payment that fits into your budget. Get out of that high-rate loan and get the interest rate and the payment you deserve from DCU. Learn more and apply today at dcu.org/refinance. Insured by NCUA. Membership required. All right, Callahan, let's go.
This is the Jerry Callahan Podcast.
You know, I was on the air in the morning for 20 years. I don't know if you guys heard that. Yeah, it was on the morning drive. We were, man, I was somebody. And I was on the radio for 25 years total. And now I've been doing this for more than a year. And there's one thing I have not yet done in my career. I can honestly say I've not yet been drunk on the air. And I guess it's a common thing, a popular thing. And I've known people who've been drunk on the air. We were just talking about a couple of them before we started recording. But I was reading this interview or listening to this interview with Joe Buck and Colin Cowherd. And Joe Buck's a big star. Joe Buck's a play-by-play guy for Fox. He's in the booth for baseball, for football with Troy Aikman. And he says he and Troy sometimes indulge. They have a couple cocktails while they're doing the games. I mean, I never heard it and thought they sounded kind of jiggy. But apparently Joe says they occasionally get bored and order a drink. But listen to what they drink. Tell me if you guys would like to do this one of these mornings. I've never tried this. I've had tried a lot of things, but I never tried this. He says, I'll say this. We've had that glass of bourbon in the booth. Although it's not bourbon, it's tequila with a splash of Grand Marnier and grapefruit juice. Well, I've been through a couple of years where the first inning of every postseason game, I had the runner go get the biggest beer the stadium sold. And I had to sit there and I would sip it and remind myself to relax and have fun. Now, that sounds like he might have a problem. What do you guys think? I mean, Grand Marnier, tequila, and grapefruit juice in the booth with Troy. I'll give him credit, though. He's never sounded wasted. He's never sounded like Harry Carey, but maybe I haven't listened closely enough.
I read that article. I didn't hear it out of his voice. Let me hear this first. I want to hear him say it.
I told Troy this. I said, every broadcast partnership has a different feel, regardless of who is the analyst. Al Michaels always feels like he's leading the broadcast. Tony Romo is the energizer to Nance. You and Aikman are different. You sound like college buddies. You sound like you both have a small glass of bourbon that you sip occasionally during the game, and it's an incredibly comfortable experience for me as a consumer. And I'll ask you what I asked Troy. How long did it take to curate that?
It took longer for Troy and me to get there than it took Smoltz and I to get there. And I'll say this. We have had that glass of bourbon in the booth, although it's not bourbon. It's tequila, splash of Grand Marnier, and grapefruit juice. I went through a couple of years where in the first inning of every postseason baseball game, I had the runner go get the biggest beer that the stadium sold. And I had it sitting there, and I would sip it from time to time to remind myself to relax and have fun. I'm just doing a game. And I brought that over to football, but because Troy is a man of finer tastes, beer somehow became tequila, Grand Marnier, and grapefruit juice. We haven't done it in a long time now, but it was good for a stretch. And I
Hey, listen, wow, he sounds confident in it. He doesn't make it sound weird in any way. I like it.
Yeah,
I
mean, and also, Jerry, tequila's come a long way since we were kids.
Yeah, now you got Brady. 1 week they had Tom Brady and Bruce Springsteen drinking it. Now we can have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. You're right. Yeah, exactly right. When we were younger, it was just a shot. We did the lemon.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We're not talking Jose Cuervo disgusting stuff.
Right. No, like Patron is beautiful. It's like delicious, silky booze. It's really nice. And so it's not like when, we were drinking jet fuel and eating the worms, actually, which I think from tequila. Right.
It was the shot. It's one of those shots where before you did it, you regretted it. You know, you hadn't even done it yet and you regretted
it.
And when you did it, you said, that's going to burn a hole in my stomach and it's going to have me, praying to the porcelain god in no time. But I guess, I'll give, like you said, give him credit. He sounds like he's matter-of-factly saying we occasionally have a cocktail or a beer to relax. I never knew anybody did that. Since Harry Carey or maybe Howard Cosell, I didn't think that was done in the booth, because if you got caught, I mean, people would be like, this guy's out of control. He's doing a game and he's pounding tequila. But Jerry, it never sounded like they were drunk or anything.
No, especially Joe Buck is such a straight man. That is surprising. But, I mean, his dad is from the generation, certainly, where they were doing it. Cosell and those guys were drinking during the games. You hear radio guys, supposedly, and this is not a contemporary name, but supposedly Wolfman Jack used to just drink glasses of vodka on the air. So
that's how he got the voice. But Buck is such a weirdo. I've been meaning to. I've never read his book. He's got a book out, and he was promoting it, so I never really had an interest. But then I heard him do an interview, and he had the weirdest addiction I think I've ever heard. I mean, there are some weird addictions. Occasionally, you read stories about people who like eat pillows or something, and they just have this bizarre thing that they can't stop. He's addicted to hair replacement surgery.
Yes,
I can tell you it's a wonderful thing, hair replacement surgery, but it's not like fun. There's no fun in it. It hurts. I mean, it's a long day. It's a tedious process. It's worth it. Don't get me wrong. And if
also, like, what does this addiction consist of? Isn't it a one-time process? Maybe there's some maintenance to it, but like,
I guess it was for me, but you can go back and have them do it again and again if you want to, get even fuller head of hair. But, I don't know. I got to read the details, but I've heard him talk about it, how he got addicted to it and he kept going back for more hair replacement surgery. And there was two things. I'm wondering why. I mean, I think he dumped his, first wife or some young hot wife, and we'll get to the Dave Portnoy story later, but addicted, why you'd have to do that is beyond me. And then why you would admit it. I mean, I guess I can't knock a guy for admitting his bizarre peccadilloes, but that is a strange thing to be addicted to. I don't know about you guys, but that's another thing I've never done. Never been back and had an addiction for hair replacement, nor have I had tequila during the show. But then again, I've always been a morning host. And even when I've done nights with you guys, with Cullinane, we did election night. We did Super Bowl night, I was not indulging. I was it wasn't that hard to just say I'm doing a show.
You didn't have a couple drinks during the Super Bowl,
I was actually shocked
at that. Hearing this, because Mute had a couple of beers, but I was shocked, Jerry, that you didn't have a few beers. I guess the idea is to either have none or have ten.
We did for that debate night, the last night before the lockdown. We did the debate. The Bernie Biden debate, and I had a few at the Legacy Club. That feels like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it does.
I swear to God, I can't believe
it. It's only a year ago. Jesus.
We did a broadcast, a show from the Legacy Club, watching the debate, eating pizza and drinking beer. That's when that's back in free America. It feels like we're talking about Red Dawn here, and we're talking about when we were at school playing football and everything was normal. And now, the Soviet army has taken over our country and we're all in lockdown still. But there's hope. There's hope, Shattuck. I don't know how much of the town hall between Anderson Vanderbilt and Joe Biden you saw, but here's what I'm going to say is, if you want to read the great divide in this country, watch and then read the reaction to the town hall with Joe Biden last night with Anderson Cooper in a room full of liberal Democrats, just cupping the man and servicing him and making him attempt to make him look good. It was a mess. It was a mess. Biden was, as expected, disoriented. He was not incoherent, rambling, lying. In his defense, when he was lying, I'm not even sure he was lying, because he doesn't. He is clearly not fit, not up to the task, and everybody knows it. And you're going to have this pretend thing every once in a while where they say, you know, boy, he was relaxed. I had the thing on CNN. I left it there for, like, Don Lemon came on immediately after with a couple of hack reporters. And they say, oh, he was comfortable and he was relatable. And unlike the last guy, he's just a normal guy talking. You know what he is? He's a normal 78-year-old with cognitive issues talking about the most important things in the world, the most complicated things in the world. And he just can't do it. It just,
yeah.
It's, and I was not laughing. I was not mocking. I was amazed how in over his head the man is already. It's been a month, Shattuck. What is this going to look like in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I don't see a 2 or 3 years coming, but you're right about that. We don't see anybody on TV as old and, you know, in such decline as he is. I mean, when's the last, maybe Dick Clark 7 years ago or Kirk Douglas? I don't know. I mean, you don't see anybody who that
General
old.
General Stockdale.
Well, right. I mean, although he was loosened, right? But he was just, but he was punchy, you know, he wasn't made for that. But Biden, yeah, no, he is slow. And the idea, you know, that we're all clapping that he was with the first pups, which I call him, Jerry, I call him the first pups, the dogs, like the media does now, too. Yeah,
that's the only question I think they left out, Shattuck, is how are you dogs?
One of the questions was, Jerry, one of the questions the reporters asked was, we love your dogs.
We love your dogs.
That's a question now for the White House press corps.
Will you bring us coffee next time?
I right.
haven't seen it yet. We talked about it last week, and Tucker Carlson did a brilliant monologue about the media and how they're so far gone and so far in the tank. And he showed that video, and it's just so uncomfortable where he's out there with his dogs. And Biden thinks it's Valentine's Day, but it's not. It's a couple of days before Valentine's Day, and she's putting up those stupid hearts, Dr. Jill, and the media is on the mic, on camera, and they are doing these just humiliating, slobbering questions, and you're saying, have some pride. Have some I know you're in the tank, but you know we're watching. And the grown man who's got like a microphone and a sound and a camera guy, and he says, we love your dogs. And it's like, oh, my God, did you watch yourself? It's like maybe – you know, maybe he had a couple of tequilas like Joe Buck doesn't remember. And then the woman says, could you bring us coffee next time? And we'll bring the donuts. And Biden hands the coffee in the cup to the woman and says, I haven't really touched it yet. And she says, oh, I can't. I don't have a mask. She takes the coffee, which she's already drinking, and says, thank you.
Right.
And I'm thinking, unless it's like my wife, would you take a coffee in a cup from somebody else and drink it? Like, would you do that?
No, it also had no top on it, and it's a no. Any senile guy hands me a coffee, I'm good with. But you know, the worrisome part of that was, I mean, the press part was pathetic, obviously. But when he walked from the stone walkway on the grass, he was suddenly off balance, and the way he shuffled was Jesus. Like he needed a walker with the little tennis balls in the bottom of it there.
Yeah.
It is. I didn't even have a taste. Here, come on. I promise you.
I'm going to get in trouble. I don't have my mask.
I give you my word. I didn't have any.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
it. Okay. All right. See you guys.
Thank you, sir.
It's still
wait,
weird.
Wait. He's just about to say, we love your dogs. Keep it going, Colleen.
You got a nice pair of dogs there.
I do. They're good boys. They're good.
Love your dogs. A grown man, a reporter for a network with a suit on and a real job and a camera guy, and he says, we love your dogs. It's just so embarrassing. And here's the amazing thing, Shattuck, is I always think, even if you're in the tank for Biden or one candidate, like obviously they're totally in the tank for Kamala, and you know, and at the state level, we see the New York reporters who are in the tank for Cuomo. Even if you're like a total, complete obsequious rump swab stooge, like a, even if you're, you know, Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Kimmel, just a pathetic Democrat operative pretending to do a job. Don't you reach the point where you say, people are watching, people can see me, know who I am, they can hear my voice when I say Happy Valentine's Day. Don't they hear that and say, people are going to wonder about me? Like if I were, I don't know, if I was something, just trying to think of somebody I idolize, you know, like a, you know, Fred Lynn, I guess it'd be Tucker Carlson. I like Tucker. I like watching. If I were around him, talking to him, my first thought would be, I can't appear to be a complete stooge here. I got to have some, you know, dignity. They don't even pretend. It's amazing. And
well,
we can get to this because you and I were texting about this. After the damn, if you missed the town hall, and you probably did, it was Biden shuffling around the stage like an old man. That's what he does. He walks, you know, there are other old people who don't walk. He walks like an old man. He talks like an old man. He looks brittle. It's a bad look for the leader of the world. But anyway, he's up there with Anderson Cooper, who's, you know, trying his best to present a strong image. And he's got a bunch of plants in the audience, and they all go up. His first question was this young teacher who's like, you know, 28 years old, says, I don't think it's safe to go back to school. We could all die. Do you want us to put us in a room with a bunch of kids and we could all get the? It's not safe, is it, Mr. President? And I'm going, oh, God, this is like 99% of the country wants everyone to go back to school. They find one plant, teachers union lackey, to ask a question. It's exactly what they were looking for. The next question, it was all friendly Democrat questions or pretend, yeah, I'm an independent. What are we going to do with the climate, Mr. President? I mean, they're just plants. Anyway, if you're covering this, if you're a media person, you have to understand that lots of people watching know you love the guy. They know you support him. They know you hate Trump. How about you project it? I don't know, an image that you're actually a professional. Is that a thought before they start, you know, licking his toes?
Well, Jerry, I mean, you obviously haven't been paying attention to the news because there was a huge story that dropped yesterday. If you didn't notice that Jill Biden was in the Sweet Lobby cookie store wearing a scrunchie. So she had a scrunchie on. One of the reporters says, so part of what I never realized I needed was a FLOTUS and a scrunchie. Another blue checkmark says, Dr. Biden with a scrunchy ponytail buying chocolate is the normal I need from my FLOTUS.
Who said that?
This is Marisa Fitzgerald, and she's got eight other names.
It's a daily thing. Yesterday or 2 days ago, we did the CNN reporting that Biden likes to have a fire in the fireplace in the Oval Office. And I heard Dana Perino, used to be a presidential spokesman. She says every president has a fire in the Oval Office. But you missed the point. Joe Biden occasionally puts a log on the fire himself, picks up a little Duraflame, drops it on the fire. That's an everyman kind of thing. Trump never added a log to the fire. Only Joe Biden.
Who was the reporter on Twitter last night who, when Biden did his vaccine, you know?
We'll get to that. It's Greg Kessler from the Washington Post.
Yeah, okay, that's who, yeah.
Fact checker. But we did there was three yesterday that we talked about. It was the putting the log on the fire. It was the love affair between Jill and Joe.
Yeah.
Which the reporter said was not only genuine, but restorative. Restorative.
But Jerry, also, you know what? You know what's quaint and lovable about Biden? He likes to turn in on the early side.
Right.
You know,
he goes to bed early.
Yeah, like that's a good thing. So he is constantly fatigued, has to turn in early, and is always cold. Those aren't good signs. Those are old people things.
And while I think the number was 3,000 people perished from the coronavirus, he was playing Mario Kart with his granddaughter, and he won. He was Luigi, and he won. She was much more adept at video games, but somehow he rose to the occasion. It was like the 1980 U.S. Olympic team. It was Buster Douglas all over again. It was an incredible performance. He rose to the occasion and beat his granddaughter Naomi in Mario Kart. I know it was bad with Obama. I know the media was in love with him like never before. But to me, it seems this is even more embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because it's an attempt to not only, you know, purge themselves from the disdain that was Trump, but it's an attempt to prop up an obviously over his head, overwhelmed, frail old man who, you know, let's be honest, nobody really voted for. Everyone either, you know, 80 million people voted against Trump, and he happened to be the lucky recipient of that. But their job when they wake up in the morning is, how can we help him get through the day? That's mm-hmm. your job. If you're the Washington Post or New York Times or CNN or Politico, you wake up in the morning and say, how can we help our guy get through the day?
Yeah. And with the Mario Kart stuff, it's probably a silver lining, you know, that he wasn't in a real car, because at this point, you don't want him driving. But the thing about Obama, and you're right, Jerry, versus Biden, the attention to Obama was obviously, it was disgusting, and it was a total tongue bath night and day. He would go into the White House briefing room, and they would swoon. They would laugh at what he said.
And they would say, what enchanted you the most?
Yes.
What troubled you the most?
To the point where Obama used to get impatient with the press sometimes, because he used to want to get a question so that he could pitch his messaging. And they wouldn't give him any questions because he was getting a massage. But at least with Obama, like, there were some things that you could spin into positive fluff. You know, the guy could shoot a three-pointer. He did know his college brackets when he did that stuff.
He didn't know. He couldn't. Well, whatever. He wasn't in cognitive decline.
I understand, but that's what the thing. The problem is that with Biden, we're seeing him in terrible form here and saying incredibly incorrect, erroneous, and things that would have been called racist a few months ago. And we're being gaslit by this media who's telling us, no, it's absolutely normal. Isn't it refreshing? You should be refreshed now that the norms are back, and now we can be comfortable.
All right. We got lots to get to, and including some of the greatest hits from last night. But the best one, without a doubt, was when he says, and I make this point all the time, is when you're a guy like this and you know the media will carry your water no matter what, or like Cuomo, you slip up occasionally and you say things that are so obviously untrue because you just figure you've done it before and they got your back and it won't matter and they'll explain it away and they'll move on. I mean, if it's Trump or if it's, you know, if it's Ron DeSantis, they pounce, they seize. If it's Joe Biden, they say, yeah, just a little guffaw, you know, a little gaffe. So last night he's talking about the vaccine at the town hall. And he said there were no vaccines when he took office. He took office on January 20th. I don't know if you're aware of this. That's less than a month ago. And immediately everybody, even, you know, in Twitterverse, but everybody online is going, what? It's not only a lie, but it's just so easily verifiable.
Right.
That you're going, well, and immediately people are tweeting out the picture of Joe Biden getting the vaccine in early January. He had both doses, by the way. They were doing a million people a day when he took office. And he literally tells Anderson Cooper, and I don't think Cooper followed it up, did he?
No.
And he said, there was no vaccine when I took office. And you go, don't you have to pick your spots if you're going to lie about Trump, if you're going to lie about whatever? You can't be that blatant. So I almost believe the fact checker for what they need a new term for fact checker. It's like the Washington Post fact checker, this Glenn Kessler's job, just like, you know, Snopes or PolitiFact, their job is to help explain away, you know, a little gaffe when
they're the Iron Dome defense system for Biden. That's what they are now.
The Iron Dome defense, the IDDS, we should call them. Here's Glenn Kessler, perhaps the most prominent fact checker, and I use that with the quotation fingers. He writes after this, and everyone jumped on this lie. He says it was a verbal stumble, a typical Biden gaffe, as he had already mentioned 50 million doses being available when he took office. Ex-Trump officials should especially cool the outrage meter, as it just looks silly. And in this case, he's referring to Kayleigh Mack and any one of millions of people who pointed out the lie. And included the video. So it's silly to point out when Joe Biden tells a lie on camera, and you should just cool your jets because, you know, it's a typical Biden gaffe. So Biden, you know, when he says whatever, that he went to South Africa to get arrested trying to visit Nelson Mandela, is that just a typical Biden gaffe, or can we call that a lie?
Right. Well, in marching in the civil rights movement, where he had to drop out of the presidential race and apologize for his gaffe in 1987. I mean, he's got Biden's the king of this stuff. So, I mean, of course, they have to bring gaffe back. But the media now, this is tough for them because they've all acknowledged that the vaccine exists because they need to acknowledge that to form the narrative that Trump screwed up the vaccine distribution.
Right.
So it has to exist for him, Trump to have ruined the distribution. So Biden's not where the media is. They've all moved. They've all decided collectively, yes, we're going to say it exists. That way Trump screwed it up again and screwed us again. He's killing more people, more Vietnams again. Right. So
how many? What's his death toll? It's over what? 60, 70,000 that he's killed. I just got to keep, you know,
that's a Vietnam.
More than Vietnam. Yeah. But there was a whole bunch of these things. And I used to watch, you know, Trump do it, not a town hall necessarily, but a press conference, which he used to do. And those are, you know, a thing of the past, presidential press conferences. They don't exist anymore. But, you know, what the heck? You know, it's good old Joe. What do you really need to know? He's doing his best. But I'd watch and occasionally hold my breath because Trump would occasionally go off the rails. He'd say dumb stuff. He'd wish. Mm-hmm. He'd say, don't we all miss Roger Ailes? He would wish Ghislaine Maxwell the best. He'd say crazy, dumb stuff. And I'd go, no, Donald, no, don't do that. It must be hard to be a complete Biden supporter, be a partisan and watch Biden and just hope that his train of thought doesn't go off the tracks. I mean, there were times last night where you're saying, just get through the sentence, Joe. Just don't, you know, don't say anything colossally stupid.
Yeah.
And he did a couple. I mean, did you see when – I don't even know what the question was when we started talking about interracial couples on TV. It was like bizarre. And another one where Anderson Cooper was sitting there going, he's ready to catch him when he falls. That's his job, to help Biden get through it and find another Democrat, you know, in the plant, in the audience, to ask another softball question. And Biden – I didn't even catch the question, but Biden starts talking about today. What does he say? 2 out of 3 – couples on TV are interracial now?
And I'm going to say something's going to get me in trouble, which I couldn't go through a whole show without doing that. And that is that, think about it. If you want to know where the American public is, look at the money being spent in advertising. Did you ever 5 years ago think every second or third ad out of 5 or 6 you'd turn on would be biracial couples? No, I'm not being facetious. The reason I'm so hopeful is this new generation. They're not like us. They're thinking differently.
They're not like us.
That was a question about police brutality or something. Shouldn't police be more compassionate? He starts talking about every second or third commercial is a biracial couple, except for the Super Bowl. I'm fast-forwarding through all commercials anyway. Is that true? I mean, I don't even know.
I don't count. But who's this us? Like us? Who's this us, by the way? You're the one who came up with the criminal justice mass incarceration legislation, not me. He's the one who worked with the segregationists. He's the one who kept Kamala Harris off of the school bus when she was just 5.
I was that girl. I'm thinking it's generational. So he's talking about him, Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell,
Milton Berle,
Charles Grassley,
yes,
Milton Berle, Bob Hope,
Art Linkletter, maybe is in there.
Yes, Lawrence Welk. They're not like us. And his proof that they're not like us is that 2 out of 3, every second or third commercial has a biracial couple. That was. Somewhere, I don't know who's calling the shots with Kamala behind the scenes, whether it's, Jill or Jen Psaki, but they're backstage and they're going, whoa, don't do it, Joe. I was waiting for him to start, you know, talking about how the good old days, you know, when, I don't know what show would he have watched in the good old days, you know, what sitcom? My Mother the Car? What do you think his favorite sitcom?
Dobie Gillis, I don't know. It's something, something around that time.
Or, you know, talk about Father Knows Best. You know, when we watched Father Knows Best, you know, after dinner, they didn't have any biracial couples. Dick Van Dyke and his wife slept in twin beds. They're not like us. It's too bad they can't just let him go. Maybe one of these days he'll be trapped. Does he have to do a press conference, or can he just never, ever do one?
He doesn't have to do one.
There's nothing in the Constitution. He has to do a State of the Union, and that ought to be a performance art.
Oh, you're going to see a certain female and a college kicker in that State of the Union, Jerry.
No, she's been replaced by the next woman who's going to be in the NFL, that woman that tackled the peeping Tom in front of her house.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
that woman is going to be the first woman in the NFL. Maybe she'll be there, but the State of the Union is going to be a trip. I don't know when he does it, but I can't wait. But this was...
Does Kevin McCarthy get to rip the copy? Hey, by the way, another thing that's such a double standard is last night, you know, they always talk about Trump, you know, was cozying up to Kim Jong-un and Putin and this and that. And Biden last night, not only he didn't just cozy up to Xi of China, but he defended China's policy. He defended.
I you know what? Here's where he's lucky, Shattuck, that he's kind of inarticulate and incoherent. He said, in not a very straightforward way, but he said that they have certain cultural norms in China. And in the same sentence, he talked about genocide.
Yes.
It sounded like he was calling the genocide of the Uyghur Muslim a cultural norm. And I don't know if he could find this, Colin Ain. I don't know if it matters because it's almost...
he said this before. The gist is that they need to form unity in China. And sometimes to do that, you have to use coercion. And if coercion means concentration camps and, you know, a one-child policy, whatever it means, if that's what you need to do to shape order in your country, then, well, I mean, you can understand that. Biden is a big sympathizer with China. I didn't hear as glowing tribute to Israel, though.
No. Well,
did they get a phone call?
No, well, maybe Kamala will call him, or maybe some undersecretary or assistant deputy vice chairman of the Homeland Security will call him, but he's not going to call him. There was a tweet I saw sent out, which is bizarre. It is Kamala Harris on the phone, and it's an old-fashioned phone with a cord, you know? And she takes a picture of herself with a serious look on the phone. She says, just talked to Macron of France. We discussed issues in the world and climate change and... And I'm going, that's supposed to be a president. That's what a president does. They send a picture of themselves on the phone at the Oval Office, at the desk. And they're having her do it, and they're not hiding it. She's talking to world leaders. She, the woman that didn't get a vote in the primary, that was rejected out of hand by Democrat voters in every state. I mean, didn't even make it to Iowa. She was so unpopular. She's now calling world leaders to discuss climate change. But
he must have been like cupping the phone saying, why is this lady laughing so hard during this conversation? That's all she does is laugh during the conversation.
Who is this? Who is this? but, you know, the important thing is Joe was busy, I guess. So how do you think you're a world leader? You're Emmanuel Macron. And I'm not good enough for the president. I get the vice president. I never got Mike Pence in 4 years. I never talked to Mike Pence. But I guess we should give him credit for being honest. They know that Joe is not up for it. But it was at first I was hesitant to flip on the town hall. Of course, it was against Tucker. But then I started watching it. No, it was against Hannity. I started watching it, and I couldn't stop. It's like a sitcom. Everyone has a role. The questions are all pre-planned and planted, and they're softballs. And Anderson Cooper's got love in his eyes. He looks at Biden and said his goal is to help him get through this. And they made it to the end, and there's a big sigh of relief. And then they go to the post-game show, and everyone says, wasn't he just folksy? He just felt like your old uncle. You just felt comfortable with him.
Jerry, the adults are back.
The adults. Decency is back, and yes. Civility, and real love, you know,
in his tone, the way he speaks. It's about his tone, tone. It's almost patriarchal. It's something about it is very comforting to people.
You can trust him. You can trust him.
Like Andrew Cuomo's tone. You know, he had a very deliberate and slow manner.
We can play the answer on China, although again, it's kind of convoluted. But do we have Joe Biden talking about his conversation with President Xi?
You know, Chinese leaders. If you know anything about Chinese history.
It has always been the time when China has been victimized by the outer world is when they haven't been unified at home. So the central, to vastly overstate it, the central principle of Xi Jinping is that there must be a united, tightly controlled China. And he uses his rationale for the things he does based on that. I point out to him, no American president can be sustained as a president if he doesn't reflect the values of the United States. And so the idea, I'm not going to speak out against what he's doing in Hong Kong, what he's doing with the Uyghurs in Western mountains of China and Taiwan, trying to end the one China policy by making it forceful. I said, and by the way, he said he gets it. Culturally, there are different norms at each country, and their leaders are expected to follow.
Culturally, yes. They have norms to follow, which include putting millions of Uyghurs in concentration camps and sterilizing them and raping them and forcing them to make sneakers for LeBron and Colin Kaepernick and all the Nike guys. But hey,
I like it how he establishes at the very beginning, this is going to be vastly overstated.
Right.
I mean, that's an odd disclaimer to have. What I'm going to say is going to be wildly inaccurate, but here I go.
Very, it's to oversimplify. If you know anything about Chinese history, what do you bet? I mean, he there's probably like kids in fifth grade that know more about Chinese history. And I'm not blaming him. I mean, he's busy at home. I mean, what he knows about China is how he can help Hunter make millions. That's what he knows. And as far as I can tell, he's pretty good at that.
You would think that considering there are 500,000 dead Americans right now because of the virus that came from China,
yeah,
and the mismessaging and misdirection they did, you know, purposefully at the beginning and using and sending the WHO on a wild goose chase when they could have just been forthright with the facts of how this stuff was spread and how the spread looked like in China. You know, they were happy. China was happy to send flights directly from Wuhan into JFK, right, directly from China into San Francisco, well into this period when we were being when they knew that it was going to be deadly for us.
There's nothing.
There's no sanction. There's nothing. There's just
that. Not only that, he signed an executive order that says you can't call it the Wuhan virus. It's like he's afraid we'll hurt their feelings. They killed.
Yeah.
You know. According to simplify it, they killed 500,000. Americans, and our president's worried about hurting their feelings by calling it the Wuhan virus. It's just, it is amazing when you look back how little there is in terms of pushback, blowback, repercussions for the country that sent this deadly virus here, destroyed our economy, cost us trillions, cost lives, just ruined business. And we don't even say a word about, you know, You a-holes, look what you did here.
No, they're also taking command of the South China Sea, closing waterways to other for trade, et cetera, which costs a lot of money. I mean, if China were to shoot down an American plane or sink an American battleship or carrier in the sea, you would say, that makes sense. They've been working up to this. That makes sense. This aggression has been, you know, coming for a long time. So these people should be seen as a threat. China is not an ally. We're becoming in the way of China's fortunes right now. And
of course, they're laughing at us. They're laughing.
Oh, totally. Totally. They're going to our colleges and then going back home with all the knowledge. They're paying cash up front for these to Liz Warren to be educated and then going right back home.
And we're sitting here worried about, you know, whatever, who's.
I like the scrunchie.
We're worried about what the host of The Bachelor said as he defended a woman who went to a party, and they're getting ready to, you know, close off the South China Sea and kill 1 million of their own citizens because they're focused on taking over the world. It's just so there's just such a vast divide here, and they're thrilled at our new leader who says, "Hey, it's just cultural norms." So they're got people in concentration camps, cultural norms. Hang on, hold that thought. I got to talk about our new sponsor, GovX.com. That's GOVX.com. As we all know, uniformed professionals sign up to serve causes greater than themselves. If you've ever served in the military, law enforcement, firefighting, or frontline medical communities, you are eligible for free membership in GovX.com, the greatest online shopping site for Americans of service like you. Your job demands a lot from you, from deployments to long shifts and the dangerous situations most people don't have the courage to face. There's a reason why GovX believes service-minded patriots like you deserve special recognition. GovX.com delivers the deals on all the gear you need for your on- and off-duty life. Register at GovX for instant access to discounts on epic brands like Oakley, Yeti, Garmin, Vortex Optics, Benchmade, Danner, and more. The site was built exclusively for the men and women who serve our country and communities. That's why every month GovX supports nonprofits serving the military, first responder, or law enforcement communities. We don't just thank you for your service, we honor it. Signing up is fast and easy and totally free. Become a member today and use code Callahan for $15 off your first order of $50 or more. GovX.com, savings for those who serve. All right, there's a few other things to get to here. Shattuck Hell, there's a lot to get to. I have a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. We used to use this expression about certain people we worked with, and I think you'll understand. Do you ever meet someone, do you know someone, and you call them the dumbest smart guy you know? It's like somebody who's well educated, is whatever, very advanced in their whatever line of work, and they just do dumb things and say dumb things, and you go, either the dumbest smart guy I know or the smartest dumb guy, one or the other. But
they usually don't have street smarts. You know what I mean?
That's one definition. Yes. It's just the opposite. One of my best friends has got a lot of street smarts. He finished 657th in our class, in high school class, and only 640 people graduated. He finished behind people that didn't graduate somehow, but he graduated, and he's done very, very well for himself because he just couldn't do schoolwork, but he could do, business, and he's done great and he's doing great. And, we would call him the smartest dumb guy. But the dumbest smart guy in the history of the world, I'm going to nominate now one Bill Gates. Obviously smart in his way. Obviously a software genius, a business genius who's worth $130 billion, was the richest man in the world. Obviously smart. But at the same time, obviously a friggin' moron. He's coming out with a book now, and I'm going to guess people in Texas are just rushing out to the book. Well, actually, they're not rushing to the bookstores. They can't drive. Their streets are shut down. They have no power. But when they can, they're going to rush out to get Bill Gates' new book on climate change and the existential threat we're facing from global warming. The headline, the book is called How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. Can you think of anybody in your life, forget 5 or 10 people, anybody that would want to read Bill Gates, a guy with a bought a $46 million yacht, beach house, oceanfront house in San Diego, owns another house that's worth like $100 billion, has a 640-foot yacht, I believe it is attempting to buy into the largest private jet company in the world, has admittedly one of the largest carbon footprints in the world, writing a book telling regular normal people, working people, that they have to start eating make-believe meat to save the planet. Is there anybody just in your life? I mean, I know you know some liberals. I know you know some dumb people who would read and dare and get lectured by Bill Gates about how they have to change their life to save the planet. It just, this is just divide. He's just an idiot.
Well, there's a market for saying everything the West does is bad, certainly. And that's the kind of book, if you're a good liberal on your Zoom call, you want that scene in the background, that you're the kind of person that would have that and read that because you're extra good. You're a virtuous person. But Bill Gates, although, I mean, Jack Dorsey's up there, at least Bill Gates showers, I think, which is something over Dorsey. But these guys, if you ever study what Bill Gates was, when he was just starting Microsoft, he was a antisocial, odd nerd.
I've seen the stories where his high school, he'd spend like 10 hours alone programming.
Yeah.
Early computers, one of those big, huge computers, and he'd just spend all day on it, immersed in it. And I understand that part of his brain works very well. But he literally, I saw the interview with Anderson Cooper, Anderson Vanderbilt, and as somebody pointed out this morning, Gates is worth $130 billion. Anderson Cooper is worth $110 million, the heir to the Vanderbilt throne. We know him. He's like American royalty. The two of them sitting there on Sunday night on 60 Minutes talking about how this is the greatest threat mankind has ever faced and talking about solutions. One of them is we have to stop eating beef. And you know, if we're going to stop eating beef, that means we have to stop, you know, cattle farming, raising cattle. And you know, I assume, I don't know what happens to in McDonald's and Five Guys, but he just wants to put them all out of business.
Ooh, sounds like a recipe for a food apartheid, Jerry.
There's never been a greater divide between these this royalty, these aristocrats and normal people. I know people, you know, who work for a living. I don't know anybody who sits there, gets up on a winter day and says, damn, we have to do something about this climate disaster. That's what John Kerry says as he boards his private jet or his yacht. They see the hypocrisy and they say, normal people saying, this guy is full of crap. Why would I ever believe him? Now, there are people that, you know, walk the walk, you know, that don't fly private jets or fly or don't, you know, whatever, eat meat because they think it's going to save the planet. Do you have any doubt that this guy, the 10 minutes after he tells you you have to start eating synthetic beef, will order a double and a double cheeseburger from Five Guys? I mean, they don't believe what they say.
Absolutely. Because
what's the company that was going mainstream for synthetic beef? Wasn't McDonald's buying it and potentially putting it in and using it?
I mean, they call it the Impossible Burger. Is that
isn't it Beyond Meat Beyond or beef? Something like that? Yeah, something like that.
He's the biggest farm owner in the United States. Like 650 million farm acres he owns, and he wants to end cattle farming because cow farts, you know, are causing the world to end. And he says it. So he says it's a great. We can do this. We can eliminate greenhouse gases. It'll be the greatest achievement in history of mankind. And you sit there and you go, you do nothing. Do nothing to show us that you believe that. Do nothing. In fact, I don't know how many houses he has, but I think I looked up the one in Southern California. It's fairly new. It's the biggest house on the water. It's on. If you really thought the seas were rising and the world were ending, would you buy an oceanfront mansion? Would you do all these things, fly private, have a bunch of SUVs pick you up at the airport? Would you have six or seven houses? Would you have one of the biggest yachts in the world if you thought this mattered?
Jerry, you forget, when you're somebody like me, you can't be expected to take a boat to get your award, and you can offset it with carbon offsets. So their way out of the climate change disaster with carbon offsets. But no, this is all about you and me. Like real people like us, we have real people problems. Like in my driveway, I have a burnt orange Dodge Caravan that's dented, that's 10 years old, that's like barely running. It shakes if it goes over 35 miles per hour. So that's like a real problem that I got this piece of crap in my life. So I can't really work on green hydrogen theory right now. You know, I got real stuff going on. People in the country, of course, now half the country has lost heat all of a sudden. You know, as they look at these picturesque wind farms that are icicles at this point, you know, people have real problems. Really, billionaires have to go find problems. So whether it's go do climate stuff or try to fly in the ionosphere like Branson does and all this other stuff,
bored. I would love to take like a year off from climate crap. Just leave me alone with the I mean, we've done amazing. We've lowered our carbon emissions more than any country that was in the climate accords that we were out of. You know, as I say all the time, when we were kids and you're not as old as I am, but Shattuck, people used to litter, you know?
Yeah.
People used to put, you know, crap in the rivers, in the Boston Harbor. We've done amazing things, you know, eliminated, you know, the pollution, cleaned the harbor, the rivers. Mm-hmm. People don't go behind a car and see them throw out a bag of McDonald's. And they used to do that, or cigarettes. That's not the way it is anymore. It is a cleaner planet, a cleaner country.
Right.
Even if you did still do that, as long as you can open up the checkbook and offset it a little bit.
That's good. If you did still do it, it doesn't mean the world will end. We had that moron, AOC, I think 2 years ago, saying the world will end in 12 years. A week later, Bernie Sanders went up to her and says, we have 8 or 9 years before the world is going to end. That's 6 years from now. If you look back at the things Al Gore, the greatest huckster, the greatest flim-flam man in American history, P.T. Barnum would be jealous. He's got a mansion in L.A., like in Malibu. He flies private everywhere. I mean, he's made hundreds of millions of dollars off this con game.
Well, and just to admit, back, Jerry,
he predicted the end of the world by like 2000 and I don't know what it was, 2000?
Yeah.
The world was supposed to end six times over since Gore made those predictions and cashed in with his, you know, movie, book, and everything else. And I don't know why Bill Gates needs to even write a book. No one's going to read it. And even if they do, they're not going to follow his orders to eat only synthetic beef. Synthetic beef. People will laugh at that. So we got to get rid of beef.
Yeah, that move is on, though. That move is on. I get hundreds of letters to the editor from all around the country. And, you know, they're sourced from some single office in Washington, D.C., probably, talking about needing to switch to synthetic. Immediately right now, it's going to be the end to terrorism. It's going to be it's a way to find social justice avenues, finally. And it's the greatest thing in the world. It's symbolic, absolute symbolic crap. But you're right. I mean, we're all against pollution. Remember the clouds over L.A., the smog in L.A. was a bad thing. Remember acid rain was melting the statues? So we had to, you know, change
it. What happened to acid rain? Is that still a thing?
No, it's not a thing anymore.
What happened to the hole in the ozone layer?
The return on investment has declined with those things. But, you know, it's funny. Like, without fail, though, and this is this has been a haggard thing to mention. Without fail, every Earth Day in Boston, trash was left all over the place.
Right.
And they all felt, no, we're doing a really good thing here, so F it. I'll just throw my stuff around. I never understand that. I don't understand how good liberals and believe it or not, Jerry, I've done 5K races. I've not at the pace that you would expect an athlete like me to do it at, but I have. So every year in Winchester, there's this 5K that I do. Every year, everybody throws their cups all over the place, and I'm like, this town is the most liberal, progressive town in the world, and you can't hold your freaking Dixie cup in your hand for 10 feet to throw it in the garbage?
But my point is always, so what if you do throw it on the ground? How does that end the world? You know what I mean? How does it end the world? So they had to go from, you know, littering and polluting to something causing the sun to get hotter and melt everything. I guess that's what it had to be existential. That's what we needed. We needed to achieve a level of existentialness. And here we are. If we don't start eating synthetic beef, the cow farts will cause the sun to burn the world and we'll all die. And nobody believes it. They keep saying it over and over. And I mean, maybe somebody does. Maybe there's some crazy liberal belief, but nobody actually believes it. And then you have a day, a week like this where the state of Texas is frozen and people are dying because there's no electricity, no heat, no power. And you're going, this asshole is sitting there telling us we have to change our lives and drive different cars and refit our homes and not use plastic bags or we'll all die from the sun. And you go, you know, try selling something else. You know, you want to sell some other, you know, you want to scam me. Come up with another way because this is not working.
Well, if next year Acme Climate Company created a laser that could bring the temperatures back down, that could level off global warming, do you think they would be, you know, satiated at that point?
No. And I always say, go back and look at the headlines, and you've done it in the 70s.
Yeah.
When all the Time and Newsweek and all the, you know, New York Times were warning that the great global cooling was here, the next ice age. We were all going to die because of the ice age. And 10 years later, it was, no, it's global warming, and no one bought that. And then they came up with climate change. So if it were, you know, really hot, climate change. If it were really cold, climate change. If there were no storms, climate change. If there were lots of storms,
right. And then
one disaster fits all. That's what we came into. And I just watched some of the Bill Gates, Anderson Cooper interview with these two rich, pompous, elitist a-holes and said, who are you talking to? Who is buying this? Maybe.
Anderson Cooper asked him, like he said, are you the right guy to the airport?
Yeah. Are you the right messenger on this? Because you fly private planes a lot and you're creating a lot of greenhouse gases yourself.
Yeah, I probably have one of the highest greenhouse gas footprints of anyone on the planet. You know, my
it's kind of ironic.
Personal flying alone is gigantic. Now, I'm spending quite a bit to buy aviation fuel that was made with plants. You know, I switched to an electric car. I've used solar panels. I'm paying a company that actually, at a very high price, can pull a bit of carbon out of the air and stick it underground. And so I'm offsetting my personal emissions.
Those are called carbon offsets.
Right. So, you know, it's costing like $400 a ton. It's like $7 million.
So you're paying $7 million a year to offset your carbon footprint.
Yep.
What the hell are you two doing? You two are doing that.
Jerry,
I think I speak for everybody. What? F you. You know, go screw you.
I love it, though.
The guy's worth $130 billion, and he spent $7 million to take the carbon and put it in the ground. He's not inconvenienced in any way.
Imagine somebody at home. I always think back to this, like just the average person who's just watching that interview, because 60 Minutes is the biggest news show on Sundays, and they're just watching him be like, no, yeah, you're right. I am the worst fucking person to be spearheading this movie.
I have one of the biggest yachts in the world. I have a fleet of private jets, but I give $7 million for offsets, and people are going, what?
Yeah.
You don't walk the walk at all. I mean, you are the biggest hypocrite. I was trying to think of somebody who's a bigger hypocrite. Maybe John Kerry.
Yeah.
John Kerry. But, you know, John Kerry's yacht is 75 feet. Bill Gates is 600 feet. I mean, Bill Gates has life rafts as big as Kerry's yacht. So that is the biggest hypocrite in the world. And if you ever
didn't think it was a religion, he's bragging about his tithing is what he's doing.
Right, right.
You know, but you know him, this, the jet fuel, the exhaust from the jet is, we're told, damaging to the atmosphere. His weird Bitcoin-y transaction of an offset, that doesn't do anything to put a Band-Aid on the hole he put in the atmosphere.
It's crazy. I drive electric cars. I bet he has a million. He probably has like 30 of them. And electricity is made from what? Coal, made from fossil fuels, for the most part. We've heard all the numbers from Texas. There's still 75% fossil fuels and like 10% wind and solar, which is the problem right now, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the guy's living like a king, and he knows it. And somehow, I have the biggest footprint, but I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I'm eating a synthetic burger. God, it's just how one person
right.
could listen to him and say, I'm going to follow. I'm going to do what he says. Not what he does. I'm going to do what he says. It's just. Yeah,
but also, you look at Elon Musk. At least you can say, well, who's Elon Musk? Well, he's the guy who makes the rocket ships that actually land right back in the platform. At this point, Bill Gates is the creator of Bing, the worst flop of a search tool ever. And if you look on a desktop, I mean, I get nauseous if I see Internet Explorer icon on a desktop now. I wouldn't trust anybody who would ever use it,
All right. Well, that's a Harvard guy, right? Bill Gates was a Harvard dropout, right? Like all the smart guys, Zuckerberg, Harvard dropouts, all. But the dumbest thing in Harvard history, I'm going to get to one second. I'm going to tell you about Shea Concrete, and then I'm going to tell you something that will you'll lose faith in Harvard University if you haven't already. But this is for you homeowners and home builders. Did you know that Shea Concrete has a huge selection of precast concrete steps? Of course you did. I've been telling you about these guys and what they do for a long time. Trust me, these guys are the best in the business. Whether you're building a new home or you need to replace an old staircase, Shea has great values with designs for any home available in concrete. You can customize your steps with beautiful stone, granite, or brick. A new staircase can dramatically upgrade the front entrance of your home. In most cases, they remove the old stairs and have you walking up your new front steps within hours. And just like that, your house looks better and it's worth more. This isn't an expense. This is an investment in your home. You pick out the steps. You sit in the window and watch on some cold winter day. They will do the rest. They'll put the new steps in, and you will be thrilled. Trust me on this. You can learn more about Shea's concrete steps at SheaConcrete.com, or just give them a call or stop in and visit and see what they got to offer. That is Shea Concrete. All right. This I had to read twice. This is so ridiculous, but I was I stumbled across it yesterday online, watching, the town hall and online. It says, I'll just read you the lead to this story. It's about a new Harvard study. A new study from Harvard University asserts that reparations for Black Americans could have reduced the number of COVID cases. Yes, that's right. A study, part of a report by the Lancet Commission on Reparations and Redistributive Wealth, claims that the disparity in COVID cases between Black and white Americans is due to structural racism and argues reparations for Black Americans would have decreased their COVID risk. I guess the good news is it's too late. I think we're past the worst of, we're through the worst of it. But it cites several variables, including that Blacks would not have been forced as frequently into high-risk frontline work and increasing the ability to access masks and hand sanitizers. So if we gave out reparations, which is hundreds and billions, then they would have had more masks, Black Americans, more masks and more hand sanitizer, and COVID wouldn't have been as bad.
Who gets the reparations? If you've just immigrated here from Africa a year ago, do you get reparations?
Right. If you're a descendant of a Civil War soldier for the North who fought and died to free the slaves, your family must pay Barack Obama's family. You got to send a check to Barack Obama. That's reparations. And if you did it, we wouldn't have nearly as many COVID cases. I mean, doesn't somebody there say this is a little bit much, guys? I know we're, trying to,
Well, it's also, Jerry, just being, if you were just
looking qualifications, credentials here, but this is a little nuts.
And also, it's just crappy programming. Really the same thing, the same argument. It's like if you guys on the sports show talked about the what's that called? The what's the big stone statue of everybody of the Roosevelt and Washington and Lincoln?
Mount Rushmore?
Yes, the Mount Rushmore of sports. The most haggard, sports topic you could ever use. The most hacky thing you could ever do.
Yes, it is. That is a slow day right there.
Yes, but it's like they do that every day. Let's do this. Everything's racist again. Topic today. Everything's racist again. Topic again. The West is terrible again. Topic again. Doesn't it get boring? It's the same damn thing.
Maybe this is setting us up for, if you don't pay reparations, there'll be a variant of COVID that will attack Black people or people of color. It's so silly. You can't even read it with a straight face. But the good news is, Shattuck, 2 out of every 3 commercials on TV now has a biracial couple. Yeah, man, come on, man.
Which is good because, the Hispanics aren't all the same, aren't a monolith like the Blacks are, right, Jerry, which are completely the same.
Another Bidenism, but hey, that was just a gaffe. Typical Joe.
During the pandemic, Jerry, it's a Black person who has to stock shelves.
Right.
You didn't know.
Right. And it's a white person who's a teacher and doesn't have to go anywhere, gets to stay home on a 12-month vacation. But I just wanted to point out that silliness. And we got to get to this before we wrap this up, because I often wonder who's the biggest dick on TV right now, on cable news or on network TV. And there's a lot of I know you like Jake Tapper. I know you're a big fan of Chuck Todd's. But can we agree that Joe Scarborough is the biggest a-hole out there, that he is blinded. He was blinded by his hatred of Trump because Trump made fun of Mika. They used to be buddies.
Yeah.
Mika and Joe helped get Trump elected. Then they turned on him. He turned on them. And they hated him so much that they would just rage. And they still do. And they don't want to move on to Biden or move on to anything. They want to stick and talk about Trump's insurrection and Trump killed us. That Trump killed the cop, which is a lie. We're now learning. Anyway, we're going to get to that. Maybe tomorrow we'll get to the list of questions. I don't know if you saw Byron York, he's a Fox News guy, and he's a Washington Examiner.
Yeah.
He has a list of questions which he submitted to the Capitol Police, and they're great questions. Mm. It's all, what happened, Officer Sicknick, and why did you, can we see the medical report, and, the injuries, 140 injured cops, how many of them serious, how many guns were confiscated? I think it's zero. I think it's zero, but he's trying to get all these answers. And hopefully he does, because it's there's so many questions. To me, the biggest question, and I'm not sure if it's on his list, but why'd they open the doors and let him in? Can someone answer that for me? Why did the Capitol Police literally open the doors and say, come on in? Who told them to do that?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Will we ever have that answer?
I don't know. I don't know.
If I could get one answer, well, I'd like to know what happened to Officer Sicknick, too.
Yeah.
Wasn't hit with a fire extinguisher, wasn't beaten, was texting with his brother later in the night and ended up keeling over and dying. And there was an autopsy, but then they cremated him, and we don't know what they learned, but we hopefully we'll find out, because it's kind of important, isn't it?
Yes. And the question you ask is important, too, because if you watch the footage of the guy with antlers and the other beaver pelt people walking around, they were surprised to be in there. When they got into the well of the Senate, they're like walking around like, I don't know. And the security guy's like, hey, don't break anything, okay? And he's like, no problem, dude. He says, just walking around.
The security guy says, can you not go up there? That's like the sacredest place in the whole building.
Yeah. But those guys didn't expect to be in there, but they walked in.
That guy's still in prison 6 weeks later, the Viking man, and he's, you know, no bail. Get his organic food, but didn't get his bail. I want to know what they're going to charge him with. Like, trespassing is going to be hard to put him away for life, which everyone wants to do. Did you see the other story? I don't know if people have seen this yet. It's just breaking. But the Antifa guy, we talked about him early on, who was leading the charge. John Sullivan's his name. He's a little punk who was arrested at a number of Antifa riots. He was leading the charge on January 6th. He was right next to Ashley Babbitt when she was shot dead. That's another question. When are we going to find out the cop who killed Ashley Babbitt? Were there any disciplinary actions against him? A lot of questions, but we'll wait and we'll see if Byron York gets some answers before we get to Scarborough.
That guy also provided all of the footage for Congressman Raskin's harrowing video.
John Jerry. Sullivan sold, he had an iPhone out when he went through the Capitol, sold his videos to CNN and MSNBC. $35,000 each. This punk made $70,000.
I didn't know that. Wow.
For being right next to Ashley Babbitt and videotaping. And he was on CNN as a guest. He was leading the way. He was screaming, let's burn this place down.
Yeah.
So clearly, I don't know how many Antifa guys, but there was one, and he was an agitator. He was causing some problems. And when Ashley Babbitt was shot, he had his phone going and he sold the video. And made I was wondering, like, does this guy have a job? He doesn't need a job. He's got CNN and MSNBC to bankroll him. But
he's a freelancer, really.
Yes. He's making more than most journalists now in one friggin' day.
Yes.
$70,000 for turning on his iPhone. And I know he was bailed out. I'm not sure why. Some guys who trespassed are still in jail. Other guys got out that day. But he's an Antifa guy, and they never get kept in jail. They always get out. So he got out. Sold his video. He's doing great. And he'll probably be on, with Chris Cuomo. When the rest of the world's talking about Andrew Cuomo, John Sullivan will be on with Chris Cuomo talking about the harrowing experience inside the Capitol. Back to Joe Scarborough. This offends me. Not many, I should say, it upsets me. It doesn't offend me. But this just drives me crazy when these people, to make the January 6th riots look worse, point out that the Capitol's a sacred place. It's a much more special place than anywhere else. So all, the police station in Minneapolis that burnt to the ground, that's not a sacred place. No. All the stores and the businesses and the restaurants that got destroyed, the AutoZone that got burnt to the ground, the Wendy's in Atlanta got burnt to the ground. People owned those things, right? They invested their life savings in those things. People worked there. They were burnt to the ground. No big deal. As Maura Healey, the Attorney General of Massachusetts, said, those fires, that's how forests grow. That's what she said. She supports Antifa and BLM burning businesses to the ground because that's how forests grow. Scarborough dismisses all those businesses, and there's almost, I think the number's up to $2 billion in damage done by Black Lives Matter and Antifa rioters who burned businesses to the ground, ruined lives. Killed people. You know what Joe Scarborough calls those things, Shattuck? Taco stands. Those are taco stands. The Capitol is sacred. By the way,
Jerry, I think you're being a jackass by saying this, according to Scarborough.
Right. So you break windows at the Capitol. Not good. I'm against that. I want those guys to pay a price, be held accountable. You throw a bunch of papers on the floor. Maybe you, kick over some stuff off a desk. That's bad. Scarborough thinks that's worse than burning Wendy's to the ground, than beating a store owner in Kenosha, a 74-year-old store owner, beating him unconscious because he tried to protect his store, burning an entire car dealer, every car in the lot, to the ground. Somebody owned that place. Somebody's life savings is invested in that place. But according to Joe Scarborough, that's not sacred. That's just a taco stand.
I know there are idiots on other cable news channels that will say, well, you know, this mom and pop store was vandalized during the summer riots, and that's just as bad as the United States Capitol being vandalized. No, jackass, it's not. The Capitol of the United States of America is the center of American democracy. And while I am a fierce believer in people's right to defend their private property, I'm not going to confuse a taco stand with the United States Capitol. I'm not going to confuse the selling of tacos with actually moving through a constitutional process that is laid out in the United States Constitution.
He replaces Chris Wallace as the guy I would most like to punch in the throat. There are so many people whose businesses were destroyed. Hell, if you look hard enough, you could see them, hear them. There's stories that, you know, restaurants small businesses, the people who owned, you know, the car dealer and the auto zones and all the places that were just destroyed and their windows smashed and fires set, they're taco stands, according to this dick.
Well, also, taco stands
burned the Capitol to the ground. You might have a case. They didn't burn it to the ground. They burned businesses to the ground. They caused $2 billion in damages.
Yes.
And that's a taco stand, according to this a-hole.
The Capitol was up and running hours after the violent armed insurrection, Jerry. Armed insurrection. But a taco stand for somebody is the livelihood of them. It's important to the community.
No one else stops.
It's probably the only source of income. This country is made of taco stands. You know, it runs on that's the economic engine of this country is small businesses. So taco stands are something, and all these small businesses are—they're absolutely more sacred. The Capitol building is not a sacred place; it's a place where elected people go to pass appropriation bills for Planned Parenthood. It's not a sacred place.
And if it is, so the women that marched into the Capitol, right onto the Senate floor during the Kavanaugh hearings, and disrupted—that's worse than anything that happened in Kenosha, too. Then, right? Because they trespassed and they disrupted this sacred place, right?
That's right.
So that's worse than the people who burned restaurants and burned auto parts stores and pawn shops and taco stands.
Right.
Even if you thought that, when you say it, you sound like such an elitist a-hole. It's like, don't you understand these were people's lives, people's livelihoods, and you dismissed them as taco stands? God, how did
David Dorn was some chump guarding a taco stand, you know?
Right. Yeah.
He wasn't doing something important like working at the Capitol building
so he got shot in the chest, but you know, AOC had to put on sneakers to run. I mean, which is worse? AOC's a congressperson. She had to put on sneakers and run for her life. By the way, another question that isn't on Byron York's list, I need to add. My congressperson, Ayanna Pressley, said definitively that the panic button in her office was removed before the riots. She said it like, yeah, they removed this panic button, which you press if you need help from the Capitol Police. Someone physically ripped it out, took it out before the riots, like it was an inside job. And then she said, I believe on the same day, that there are white supremacists in the Congress working with her, members of Congress. And because she's a freaking lunatic, nobody ever presses her. Nobody ever says, so can we see? Even if you were the Boston Globe and you have no ethics and no standards in journalism, but you might be curious and say, do you mind, Congresswoman, can we see that spot where the panic button is supposed to be where they ripped it out? No, they just report it and say, ooh, these crazy white supremacists took the button. And now she's got to work with them in Congress. And nobody presses her. I understand she's not really, doesn't have a lot of credibility on the national level because she's kind of a joke, because she's kind of insane. But if you make a charge like that and you are a sitting congressman, the media has an obligation to follow it up and say, did they really rip out your panic button and leave you vulnerable to the mob? Did they really? Or did you just make that up? And, you know, just like with AOC, who said she was in the Capitol hiding in her office when she wasn't, when she said they were outside the door, all the crazy white supremacists, when they weren't. It's just like, yeah, it's her. She's nuts. Let her, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. It just amazes me. That
yeah, no, you're right. I mean, so that's, so she's suggesting there's an active threat there in the Capitol.
Premeditated.
Right. Before that's they a big entered thing. The Capitol,
someone tore out the panic button. If that were true, Shattuck, that'd be a huge story. And everyone knows it's not true, and they just say, well, that's Ayanna. She makes stuff up occasionally, you know? That's just the way she is.
No, the Antifa guy, cinematographer guy who took all the footage, he essentially wrote the narrative of this, that it simply was a QAnon and white supremacist attack directly launched by Trump. And don't think any more about it, but just watch the pictures. And that's what the whole impeachment presentation was. Just be emotional about the pictures. That's right. It. Don't think any more about it. Don't look at the details or anything. That's
supposed to be. And repeat over and over, insurrection. And that's what they do. If you watch CNN or it's just over and over, insurrection. They tried to overthrow the democracy. It had to be the only unarmed insurrection in the history of modern, you know, in the modern world. A bunch of guys went in there with, you know, flags and goat horns and said, we're going to take over the government. Sure they were. But anyway.
Yeah, you don't steal a podium in a coup. You know, that's not how it works. But you're right. You would think an enterprising reporter, although they'd be shut down by their editors in D.C., would say, you know what, I'm just going to look into this Ayanna Pressley stuff. You know, maybe I'll look into some of these militias and just see what they're exactly about, why they went to anything. But they're not looking into anything. They just want it to be Trump's own coup. Trump launched this attack. You know, 3 years ago, April Ryan did a forensic investigation into Sarah Huckabee Sanders' pies that she cooked, suggesting that maybe it wasn't the real pie, that Huckabee Sanders hadn't made this, baked this pie. This could be a false, false
flag operation.
Right, exactly.
It is. I mean, even if you were totally in the tank, I say this all the time, don't you have a shred of, like, journalistic integrity or dignity left? Knock on, and you're in D.C., you're in the Capitol, knock on Ayanna Pressley's door and say, can I see where that panic button was ripped out? Oh, no, I can't. Okay. Can you just give me one or two names? You said there are white supremacists in Congress. Who are we talking about? Now, she probably would answer it and say, you're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or something. She would probably, even though there's no proof of that, even though it's a real scurrilous charge, she might answer it. She might say Ted Cruz. She might say Josh Hawley, but you got to ask it. I mean, I know that if you're the Globe, your full-time job is protecting her and propping her up. But if you're the Herald or if you're a TV station or maybe a national reporter from wherever, from national magazine or website or Politico, you can't say, excuse me, Miss Pressley, can you show me the panic button? Oh, they put it back in. Well, that's nice. Anyway.
Jerry, they're covering Major in the Oval Office.
Major and Champ.
Yes, the first pups, as reporters have been tweeting out.
Can we isolate that, Colin? And I want that drop for a future reference. I just want, we love you, dogs.
We love you, dogs. I got it for you.
We love you, dogs. All right, Shattuck, we got to go. That is Tom Shattuck from the Burn Barrel podcast and the Lowell Sun. And
we need to pump up the Burn Barrel, Jerry. We need to pump it up. The only reason I want to pump it up is I want to know what it's like for a husband wife duo to produce content. Like when the husband goes on a rant like Joe Scarborough does on national television,
right,
on a successful show. Ooh. Ego must be insanely turned on as that's going on. The only person who has that opportunity is Shattuck right now. We got to pump him up so we can know what that's like.
But look at this poor wife. She's got to look at him going on a rant. I mean, sweating and.
I always,
Every time they show Joe, just like you just did just now, when you show Joe going on a rant, I always, my eyes are drawn to Mika to see if she's like rolling her eyes going, oh, this idiot, you know, because usually when Scarborough's ranting, it's senseless, stupid, like just now about the taco stand. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's foreplay. Maybe it's.
Oh, it is. It is.
You think definitely. She's got her hand on her? He's got his hand under the desk, like reaching over, and it's.
I don't want to. I don't want to assume anything. I want to pump the burn barrel up.
Yes.
Up to 100,000 an episode, so we will know the following day what it's like. Because Shattuck can go on his rants too. He can win some of those.
I like that. Plus, I got buns of steel, so I'm looking better than I ever have.
Right. Don't ruin a good thing. Don't ruin it.
Yeah, you gotta get. Yeah. You gotta get. So there's a lot of these additives, and you know these. Super beats and these kind of things, you got to get, you know, involved with some of them because, you know, you are a workout warrior.
And correct.
There's got to be someone who can underwrite the Burn Barrel podcast. That's just you and your wife. I was on it before, but now it's just you and your wife.
It is. Well, and sometimes a guest. Yes, indeed.
You still have guests or is it just you and your wife?
I mean, it's me and my wife usually. Sometimes we have guests here and there.
Is it? Let's just get that out in the open then. Is it foreplay? Ever? Is it ever a foreplay?
I would say, how could you look at me, Jerry, and not consider it an on-ramp to a romantic interlude?
Do you lock the kids in the basement when you do this?
No.
That's the problem, is the kids are a factor here.
They swarm in, Jerry.
Have that for
they swarm in and screw up the cameras and screw up everything, and usually that's when it's time to call it a night. But yes, right. It is not perfectly performed, unfortunately.
All right, when you're done with this podcast, you can listen to that podcast, the Burn Barrel podcast with Tom Shattuck. What's your wife's name again?
Alice.
I'm sorry. With Alice and Tom Shattuck. You can check out the little son too, and you'll hear him again here soon. Thanks.
Come back tomorrow, Jerry. I like this now, since we're in a sports desert.
What happened to
you're in a sports desert? Suddenly, we're calling the fat guy up north a little more often. I'm getting all sorts of love.
What happened to Turtle Boy? He said he had
Turtle Boy's in tomorrow. I didn't say you were in tomorrow.
I'm coming back every day.
On Twitter, Turtle Boy said he has a story that will blow our minds. It's the most incredible, and he hasn't revealed it. So
but his story, he said. Isn't it his story?
It's his story, but somebody has been harassing him. A villain, he said.
Yes.
And we know about the villains, and maybe it's the same villain, but we'll get that. We'll beat that out of him one way or the other, because it was a great tease. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. And, you know, you're right, Shattuck. It's a slow day in sports. Although, you know, the big headline is Joe Buck gets drunk. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck get drunk in the booth.
Yes.
Which I don't, no problem with that. I'm going to be listening differently now. I'm going to be listening for the ice clinking in the glass and listening to hear if those two get a little jiggy, because we now know they get plastered during their broadcasts. But you know what we didn't get to, and we'll do it tomorrow, because it's more of a visual, and we need to get the video of Portnoy's new girlfriend.
Oh, yes.
If you hate Portnoy, you're going to hate him even more now, because he's dating a Philadelphia Eagles cheerleader, and there are pictures, there's photos out there of her. And man, I thought he was riding high when he, you know, sat down with the president, but he just took it to another level now. And
unbelievable year for Dave Portnoy, just winning the year of 20. Good last year in general. Right.
This is the guy that, you know, was handing out newspapers outside Fenway, gambling rags outside Fenway.
Speaking of Fenway, by the way, because you always ask me, Dave, what do we miss? We have a lot of Boston police that listen and support this podcast. Come and get me. That was me running on Fenway Park. Come and get me, people. I'm right here. Come and get me.
Well, this video, two college kids with face masks, which is nice because that's important, running in the snow on Fenway, and it's like the cops are looking for them. I'm like, why? Who cares?
That's what I was going to say. Who gives a shit? They had a little fun.
They goofed around. They took a few pictures and video, and they left. And like the cops are trying to find them for what?
That's the best publicity Fenway Park has got in years. It's the only thing people are paying attention to in that
place. I joked that, how do we know that's not their new, you know, left fielder and your new shortstop? Because I don't know anyone on the team.
Did you go down there to see the truck leave from Jersey Street down to Florida?
Of course. You think I'm going to miss that? Of course.
My friend, today's pitchers and catchers, Jesus. Right? And it's the day.
I can't believe I used to be there for this. And we would literally sit in the in the booth, and they would bring up players and would sit there and go, "So, champ, how you feeling? How was your off season?" I mean, I can't believe we thought that was good radio, right? I mean, I guess the team was good and they had players people knew, but can you imagine?
You're sitting in a booth just absolutely miserable, and Dan Roach is giddy as hell down on the field. That's amazing.
I had a weird approach. I used to want, like, listeners. How could you expect any listeners if you brought up, and I can't even think of a damn player, Rafael Devers. "Hey, Rafael, you look like you're in good shape. Did you work hard in the offseason? What do you hope? At what spot in the order would you like to hit?" It just seems so irrelevant. And nobody likes the ownership, the management of this team. Nobody, you know, loves the Red Sox right now. They need
no. The only salvation back then was that Lucchino was edgy, yeah, and you guys would go at it a little bit, and he was good.
Right, he was a regular guy, normal guy. Now you got these elitists. I mean, John Henry's like a little Bill Gates, you know, just an elitist, pompous guy who looks down on people. They have no respect for their own fans. We know that every time someone makes up a story about, you know, a racist fan chanting, they believe the player who made it up. They don't trust their fans. They don't respect their own fans. We defended the fans every time someone, you know, like Torrey Hunter would make up a story, make up a lie. We would defend the fans, and the ownership, the management of the organization would side against their own fans. And to me, how you can root for a team like that is beyond me. But,
totally. But look at the culture, Jerry. You have Bob Kraft sending the plane, you know, to China to grab N95 masks, and just flew a bunch of nurses down to the Super Bowl. You know, I didn't see the Red Sox truck arriving with PPE, you know.
No, they would never do that. They wouldn't give a damn, you know. But whatever, we'll see. Maybe they'll sell the team, and maybe, you know, things will change. But right now, nobody cares about them. Nobody's going to be going to spring training just to watch them run the get-over drill or watch them, you know, run, you know, sprints in the outfield. Those days are over, and couldn't happen to a better bunch. Hopefully, eventually, they unload the team, and we can, you know, we can root for them all over again. But right now, hard team to like. Anyway, let's leave it there, Shattuck. This is the Callahan Podcast. I'm Jerry Callahan, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.